there's not a real appreciation of how Jim Crow operated, of how pervasive it was, and how embedded it was in the schools. In 1963, when Martin Luther King and Fred Shuttlesworth were planning demonstrations in Birmingham, 2 weeks before that, there was the farewell final black-faced minstrel show at my high school.
Which high school was that?
This was Woodlawn High School. Four or five shows, all sold out, standing room only. It may have been the last black-faced minstrel show done in America.
So what do you think of the ramifications of what some people call whitewashing, this sort of lack of knowledge about our history?
What you lose is the reality that race has been really at the core of American history from the outset. And for us to sort of think that just because maybe now we've got an African-American president, that race has sort of been relegated to some sort of sidebar, or it's not really that important, or it doesn't really mean anything in our history, that is an entirely inaccurate way of reading the past.
Speaking of history, you mentioned that the 16th Street church bombing was a reaction to school integration. What were some of the other ways that some whites resisted integration?
Whites began to look at ways in which they could have their own schools, locate them in a church, locate them in some sort of community facility, and get the education dollars from the state to support those schools, even though they would be private. But more commonly, the strategy was to create laws that were technically in compliance with Brown, but were in fact designed specifically to keep segregation in place.
Can you give us an example?
In Alabama, one of those laws that was passed by the legislature in 1956 was called the Pupil Placement Act. And what that did was to bestow absolute authority to the superintendent of any school district to literally place every student in his district based on certain criteria. One of them was proximity to their home.
I guess that would just mirror the residential segregation.
But that they didn't stop there. They went ahead and looked at other kinds of non-racial criteria. And one of those was IQ testing. And, of course, what we now know is that those tests were racially biased. The other thing that they did was to have the superintendent judge as to whether or not placing a student in a particular school would do anything that might disrupt the learning environment. Well, clearly, that was code for if you put a black kid in a white school, it's going to be disruptive, and so you don't do that.
So why did educators really resist integration so much? Was it just the social or political pressure?
The idea then, which was pervasive throughout the society, was black kids are inferior to white kids. Therefore, if you bring black kids into a white school environment, it's going to drag down the white kids without maybe helping the black kids at all, because the black kids intellectually will never perform. That was, of course, spurious, wrong, incorrect, but we don't know that in 1950. We don't know that in 1960.
Now, speaking of which, jumping forward to today, America's schools are resegregating. Even here in Birmingham, this focal point of the civil rights movement, so many years later, the city's schools are 95% black. So how did we get here? How did this come about?
History has come about. It's because in this city, as in so many other cities around the country, we have not made any kind of commitment to creating a truly biracial society or multiracial society. We are still, I think all of us, more comfortable with people who are like us, and we reflect that in our institutions. So we have institutionalized segregation. I think it's more based on status than race, but it's still institutionalized. So we've sort of created this world that we're living in.
Dr. Corley, thanks so much for your time.
Sure.